Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
And at 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I am your host, Mike Tramatozzi, with you for the next half hour. As we push forward for the next half hour, we got Christian Arnold from IslandersHockeyBlog.com and the fourth period to discuss the NHL playoffs as we head towards the Stanley Cup Finals. The Western Conference Finals is now going to go at least five games as the Phoenix Coyotes knocked off the LA Kings 2-0 in LA yesterday with the and stave off elimination. They will now play on Tuesday. And, of course, here locally we've got Game 4 of the Rangers and Devils, which has really taken a crazy turn towards what we all expected. But let's bring in a friend of the show. He's a hockey guru. He is Christian Arnold of IslandersHockeyBlog.com and the fourth period. Christian, what's up, buddy?
How's it going, Trim? Not too much. How's it going?
Doing well. Let's start in the West. Because as I opened the show, the Coyotes staved off elimination, and for the first time this series, I thought they controlled the style of play pretty much from the opening tip or the opening drop.
Yeah, no, I mean it was surprising to see. I think everyone kind of had Phoenix pegged to win this to lose this series in Game 4 and just get the Kings get the clean sweep there. I mean, they really did take it to the Kings for the first time, I think, all series long. And in fairness to Phoenix, they've been a very good hockey team. They've had their chances. Just Jonathan Quick, I wouldn't say wasn't on his A game, but, you know, he made some mistakes, and the Kings paid for it.
Yeah, and for the first time this series, they neutralized L.A.'s, not only their power play, but their penalty kill as well, because L.A., the first three games, L.A.'s gotten maybe more shorthanded opportunities than Phoenix had on the power play.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was surprising to see how well Phoenix came out. I mean, not to say they looked flat for part of the series, but, you know, they really struggled. They had their struggles this series, and Nashville was kind of the same way, and it was surprising. And the fact that the Kings didn't close out at the Staples Center the way it was, I mean, it was something that I don't think anyone really expected, because the Kings had just been so outstanding. Their offense, you know, they're finding ways to score. They're creating chances both on both sides of the puck. So, you know, Phoenix, the fact that they came out and played the way they did, it was good to see. Made an interesting series for once, and not the clean sweep that everyone was expecting.
Yeah, and like you said, for the first time, Quick seemed not mortal, because I mean he still only gave up two goals, but for the first time it seemed Mike Smith actually finally played to the par and a little above Jonathan Quick.
Well, I think Mike Smith has always played to par, and I think throughout this playoffs he's kind of been the overlooked goalie in the whole thing, because it really has been a playoffs not only in the West Coast but on the East Coast as well of goaltending. And I think Mike Smith, with the fact that you got two guys like Jonathan Quick going against him, and two all-stars in Henrik Lundqvist and Martin Brodeur going in the East Coast, that he kind of gets the short end of the stick because he's the older guy. You know, he's not really too well-known. He was a goalie earlier in the season that a lot of teams gave up on. So I think he kind of gets overlooked in the fact that the way he's played is so well over the course of the playoffs. It's, you know, he's been up there with the guys like Henrik Lundqvist and Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, a lot of people said coming in that he's one of the best goalies that wasn't nominated for the Vezina. So, you know, do you see this having to go back to L.A., or do you think this was a little blip on the radar screen?
To be honest, I'm still pretty convinced that the Kings are going to have an easy time, offing Phoenix in the next game. I don't think it's going to go back to L.A. I think they're going to get the road win. They've been a perfect road team in the playoffs, so I'm really not expecting too much on the road. They've always found a way to win, and like I said, they're the best road team in the playoffs right now, and you know, I can't remember in a long time that a team has played this well on the road as the LA Kings have.
Yeah, I mean, if you can go up to Vancouver after losing Game 4 and win Game 5 in overtime, I think going to Phoenix is a little bit easier of a task.
Yeah, I mean, not to discredit the fans, they are very passionate. They really do pack the place in when the team is doing well. So it's definitely not an easy place to play, but considering that the Kings went to Vancouver and, you know, even Nashville, I mean, they really did take it to these teams.
Yeah. Moving into the Eastern Conference, because I think before the series, a lot of people questioned whether it would get physical or it would get nasty. From everything that I saw going into Game 3, what Game 3 turned out to be, and the tirade, I mean, for a guy that hates the media, Tortorella really gave them something yesterday, I think, to get them off his back for the next couple of days. He went wild yesterday about how ripping the Devils for what he says, trying to draw penalties and whatever. I think this series finally reached the boiling point that everybody thought would be there from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, for what everyone thought it was, it's still been pretty lighthearted. You know, Peter Dubois kind of ran his mouth a little bit, and I think you kind of saw the frustration level after that game with the fact that they got shut out again, that the Devils couldn't find a way to beat Henrik Lundqvist. It played out the same way as Game 1 at the Garden, and then the elbow by Prost on Volchenkov really got to them, and guys, the fact that a guy like Zach Parise, who's been, you know, great to the media all season long, doesn't go out there and talk after that game is kind of indicative that the fact that while they seem like they're not getting frustrated, they're extremely frustrated with the way these games have gone.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how this series has gone, because if you look at the other two series for the Rangers, they all kind of seem to follow this pattern. You know, they get a good win, a convincing win in Game 1, and then they drop it in Game 2. And then, you know, it wasn't a 1-0 game or a triple overtime game, but it was still a 0-0 game going into the third period, to where they don't make it easy on themselves in Game 3. It'd be interesting to see how they come out in Game 4, because they're 0-2 in Game 4s. I don't think they like even number games in these playoffs, apparently.
No, I mean, it's very odd how these things have played out. And, I think this is going to be a 7-game series between these two teams, because they're both very good hockey clubs, and they both have a very outstanding goaltending in Henrik Lundqvist for the Rangers, obviously, and Martin Brodeur for the New Jersey Devils. But, you know, the Rangers have their weird flukes like that. I mean, those even-number games, they just haven't played well. But in the end, they always seem to win those Game 7, so I guess that's all that counts in the end.
Yeah, who cares how you get there as long as you win in advance. What do you see going on tonight? I mean, obviously the Devils have to win this game, because you don't want to go back to the Garden down 3-1, even though it's not impossible. They won in Game 2, but obviously they have to come out and push the tempo, I think, in and try and get some shots in before the Rangers' defense can settle in.
Yeah, no, I mean, they really have to sort of get the Rangers off their game a little bit, like they did in that game, too, where they got their chances, and they, you know, they got good shots on Lundqvist, and they really just, for whatever reason, the Rangers came out flat in the last game, and they got to try and take advantage of it. I mean, the Devils were outstanding in the last game, and I think that's the way they need to play all for the rest of the series. They had all their chances. They had the tempo going from they had the Rangers back on the heels for the first two periods. They just couldn't solve Henrik Lundqvist, which is going to be the breaking point in the series. If the Devils can find a way to beat Henrik Lundqvist, they're going to have a lot easier time winning games, because, look, they haven't been great through the playoffs, but they can always count on Henrik Lundqvist to bail them out. So the Devils really need to find ways to sort of exploit that weakness, where the Rangers start off slow, and they have to take advantage of it, and they have to score goals on that point. They can't let the Rangers all of a sudden just sort of come out of the second intermission in these types of games and just go all hog wild and get goals like that. That's what skills them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say, watching the series, if Lundqvist wasn't in goal, there's a very good chance, because the Devils, in terms of play, have really controlled how the series has gone, except for these two third periods. I mean, I've never seen the Rangers give up that many odd man rushes and somehow that game's still 0-0. That's got to be very deflating for the Devils.
Yeah, no, again, that goes back to the frustration level of those guys after that game. You know, you add the elbow by Prust, which to me, I don't think was too accidental as much as Pruss wants to claim that, or John Tortorella wants to claim that it seemed pretty deliberate the way he got his elbow up. But the fact that, you know, guys like Zach Parise here not speaking to the media after a game like that, the fact that Peter Dubois was kind of, you know, agitated with the Rangers played, you know, you can sense the frustration a little in the fact that this team on the ice is playing so well. They're just getting stopped by a very good goaltender in Henrik Lundqvist.
Do you think this shot blocking is starting to aggravate them at all?
You know, that's another part of the thing. The Rangers are a great shot blocking team, and, you know, they're taking advantage in the playoffs. And as much as people want to say that shot blocking is the worst thing that happened to the NHL in a very long time, you know, it's part of the game. And it's you know, I don't understand that point where people are going and saying this is awful, it's taking away from the game and so on and so forth. It's like it's a part of the game. You know, these guys are throwing their bodies, putting their bodies out there on the line and blocking shots. Not an easy thing to do to throw your body in front of a 80, 90 mile per hour shot puck that's coming right at your face. I mean, you know, it's obviously frustrating the Devils because they're not getting the shots on net that they want to. And again, it's working for the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny in game one when Kovalchuk ripped one, and I think it was Stepan took it on the leg. And I don't think I saw Stepan block a shot the rest of that game. I think he kind of felt Kovalchuk's wrath and was like, you know what? I'm going to let McDonough do this, and I'm going to let Callahan do this. I don't need to do this. And he saw Gaborik do it, which was interesting. Gaborik, it wasn't, from what I saw, it wasn't a terrible attempt to block the shot. But, again, I think Tortorella really put down the gauntlet there and said, if you're not going to at least make an effort, then I don't need you on the ice. And that's, you're talking about his, if not his best offensive weapon, at least his second best weapon.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of been Tortorella's stance all season long. You know, when you watch the 24-7 series back in December and January, you kind of get the sense of, you know, Tortorella puts the guys on the ice who are going to go 150%, give their all, you know, leave it all on the ice. And, you know, I guess he just didn't feel Gaborik was playing the way he wanted to. And in that second game, and, you know, he just didn't play him. And you know, again, Tortorella's a Stanley Cup winning coach. So, I mean, you know, if he feels a guy isn't playing the best he can, you know, you have to go with his gut, because this is a guy who's a proven winner. And, you know, I think Gaborik kind of got the message. You saw him sort of step up in that third game. So, you know, lesson learned, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, I would agree. Talking with Christian Arnold of IslandersHockeyBlog.com and the fourth period, where he's the Long Island, the Long Island rep for the fourth period. There, you write. Do you follow all three teams or just the Islanders?
Just the Islanders, but I also cover all three teams for Red Light District Hockey.net, and I'm also freelancing for Tonight's Healthy Scratches, where I'm covering the entire playoffs. So I'm all over the place.
Wow, look at you! That's like 150 things you're doing right there.
Yes, and I still manage to have a life somehow, so
wow.
It all works out.
Hey, listen, man, that's impressive. What do you see in this series going forward? Is tonight as big of a must-win as I think some people are making it out for the Devils, or do you think they can still, you know, push it to 7 if they lose tonight?
You know, I think tonight is a big game for the New Jersey Devils. They really, like I said, they seem extremely frustrated after that loss in Game 3 at the Rock, so they want to come out on their home ice, you know, shut the Ranger fans up who show up to the Prudential Center and get that win, because, look, the Rangers are a very good team, and you send that back to the Garden 3, you know, with a 3-1 lead for New York, it's safe to say that the series could end, and we all might be wrong that this won't be a 7-game series. So this is a pretty big game for the New Jersey Devils, and they need to find a way to win, especially with the other locker room sort of talking as much as they are now. So, you know, you need to get that win if you're the New Jersey Devils to try and not only keep your spirits up, but you need to keep the series alive and entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, the Devils, for the most part, have shown a pretty good resolve. Not so much in the second round, because they pretty much stepped on Philly and kind of took them out of the series from the beginning. It was like a reminiscent of an old, like, mid-90s Devils game where their defense just suffocated a very good offense in Philly. But, you know, kind of like in the Florida series where...
Hello? Tram? What else, Tram?
Like I said, we'll get Christian Arnold back up in a second. We lost him you know, rainy day here in New York, and it's causing some problems with the lines. But we'll get them back up in a minute. What I like what he said, though, was how the Rangers seem to be getting in the heads of the Devils a little bit. I don't know if it's to the point where they're fully in their head, but I think the frustration level is growing for the Devils. I think it's interesting that, you know, that they would get a little testy after Game 3. And listen, for the most part, they've really controlled the series outside of two-third periods and half of the second period of Game 2. It's really been, the style the Devils have wanted. But when you're going up against a guy like Lundqvist and a team that is just willing to block as many shots as the Rangers do, that can get frustrating to a team. You know, it's like an NBA team that'll go and hit a lot of threes. You know, you play really good defense, and then as the shot clock expires, they hit a, you know, they take a 20-footer and, you know, drill it. That's frustrating to a team. You know, and plus, I've never seen the Rangers give up that many short, you know, not shorthanded, but odd man opportunities, whether it's 2-on-1, you know, 3-on-2. Devils had two, you know, breakaways. That one was stopped by Lundqvist, and the other was a nice back check on Kovalchuk that didn't really allow him to get the type of shot that he wanted. But that also happened in Game 1. They had a couple shorthand breakaways with Kovalchuk and Parise. That, again, it was good back-checking that allowed them to not get the shots that they wanted. And, you know, it's interesting. I would agree with them that the Devils have to win tonight. You want to make this series as long as possible. You don't want to sit there and you know, say, oh, you know, they can come back from 3-1, because you don't want that. Yeah, the Devils have played very well with their backs against the wall this year when you look at Game 2 in Philly and the Game 6 and 7 against Florida. But, you know, they have to come out, not so much play any differently, because I think the way they've played has been a very consistent style and a winning style. It's just that right now they have to figure out how to try and get past Henrik Lundqvist. Kind of like how the Islanders played in 2002 when they went up against Curtis Joseph at his peak. You know, it was impossible to get shots through against Curtis Joseph. And, you know, it's interesting. But when you think about it, you know, you wonder how they're gonna play tonight. And, you know, we got Christian back up, buddy. And I was just mentioning that the Devils trying to beat Lundqvist is almost like how the Islanders had to play against Curtis Joseph at his peak. It's just so tough to get to these guys that they have to. It's almost like you get one or two goals and you feel excited for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting the way they did that. That was the series that the Islanders didn't necessarily come out on top of, but I mean, that's the way they got to play right now. It's a tough series for the New Jersey Devils. Again, they have to beat Henrik Lundqvist. Find ways to beat him. Get those fluky goals that, you know, every team seems to get every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough to try and say, oh, we'll just try and redirect shots in, because that's. You know, that's a little bit of a trickery in that, oh, you know, you could tip it wide, or, you know, he could still make the save. I don't think they can really rely on getting redirections. I think if they want to get people to the net and try and screen them, that'll work. But I don't know if they can rely strictly on saying, like, oh, we'll just get people to the net and deflect shots.
No, I mean, they've sort of been using this weird sort of kind of like moving screen sort of type thing to get the shots open. They just got to find guys who can get in front of the net and sort of get a clean shot, like guys like Kovalchuk, who have that sort of nasty wrist shot that they can just fire past any goaltender, no matter how good or bad they are. They need to get those guys in the open and get those shots on quickly.
A couple things before we move, I want to move on and talk about the Islanders for a little bit too. Is Parise a max contract guy? Because I know, you know, there's a lot of talk about how the Devils already, they made the commitment to Kovalchuk, and it's 50-50 on, you know, depending on who you talk to, whether they really have an interest or ability to sign Parise. And you hear a lot of teams talk about wanting Parise, but is he that 10-year, you know, Marian Hossa, Kovalchuk, is he in that range of contract, or is he, you know, a step below?
I would say he probably is maybe like a inch below. I mean, he's still a very good hockey player. He's probably one of the best American-born hockey players, an Olympian right there. So, I mean, he's a guy that you give a lot of money to in a lot of years.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think he's – I would agree. He's not – you know, he doesn't have a snipe or a, but he's like almost a skillfully rugged type of goal scorer, from what I've seen. Moving on to the you know, there's a third team here. There is a team called the Islanders, and mm-hmm. you know, they're making strides, but it, just like last year, there was that stretch of about 15 to 20, 25 games where they were just absolutely brutal. And outside of that, they were competitive. So I don't know. Is that it being just that no one is over like 25 years old, or outside of Molson, over 25 years old on the team, or is that still the growing pains for a young team there?
It's probably more or less the growing pains still of a team that's still trying to find an identity, still trying to find ways to win. And the Islanders are continuously going to be a work in progress until they get, you know, another veteran or two on that locker, in that locker room, and find a guy to really just get things together. I mean, Mark Streit was a great captain, don't get me wrong, but a guy like John Tavares could be a much better leader in that locker room the way he's been playing. And, you know, another top four defenseman on that roster would probably do worlds of good and get them in the playoffs. I mean, it really, if you look at the roster that Florida had, you know, and the way they played, it really wouldn't be that hard for the New York Islanders to get into the playoffs with another, you know, top four defenseman or a top six forward.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help them that they're in the most brutal division in the NHL either.
No, I mean, that doesn't help either. It's definitely, you know, it hurts that they have to play such talented teams and teams that are always going to be in the top four. So they really have to sort of work on beating those lesser opponents.
The goalie situation, and I mean, Montoya played well, Nabokov played well. What is it going for? I mean, are they really relying on DiPietro to come back healthy, or are they going forward with Nabokov? What's their goalie situation?
Nabokov's done. I mean, not Nabokov. DiPietro is basically done. Nabokov is going to be the guy that's probably going to take the helm, I should say, for the Islanders, and probably have a guy like Kevin Poulin come in and back him up for the rest of the year. I don't really see Ricky Pietro doing much more with the New York Islanders.
I know you mentioned a little bit last week that there was a rumor about them potentially moving up for Edmonton's number one pick, which seems to be annual at the NHL draft that the Oilers will have the number one pick. Is there any merit to that, or do you think they're going to stick at four? Or are they four or five? Are they going to stick there? Do you think are they you know, are they fluid in that situation? Or?
No, I mean, I think that rumor is basically nonsense. I don't really think the Islanders have the package to move up to the number one pick. It's kind of a moot point. I mean, considering the source, HockeyBuzz.com, it really has no merit. It's just a rumor, and that's all it's going to be. If the Islanders move anything, it's going to be the four pick for probably a player and not sort of move it up for a draft pick.
What do you see their offseason is playing? Is there I know they need some defensemen. Is there a defenseman in the draft they're targeting? They seem to like skill players more in the draft.
I mean, defenseman wise, I mean, they'd probably be better off going for, you know, in the free agency market if they can find someone. It's probably going to be the best player available. That's sort of been the Islanders' MO since Garth Snow took the helm. They're going to take the best player available, whether it's forward, defenseman, you know, goaltender, whatever. They're going to take the best player available in that position that they are. You know, I've heard some rumors that it could be a defenseman in Dumba, I believe his name is. So, you know, we'll see where it plays out.
Okay. Interesting tidbits as always, Christian. I'll let you go on that note. We'll get you back on when the Cup Finals are set, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, as always.
All right, no problem, man. Take care. That was Christian Arnold of Islanders Hockey Blog and the Fourth Period, giving us a little insight into the NHL playoffs. As, like I said, the Devils get ready for a Game 4 against the Rangers tonight, and the Phoenix Coyotes actually shock a lot of people and force a Game 5 against the LA Kings. A couple thoughts before we go. The NBA yesterday, you saw some craziness and some strange moves. Specifically, I want to talk about Frank Vogel and how he managed that game yesterday against the Heat, which the Heat won to even their series at 2. To me, I think he waited a little too long to put West and Hibbert back into that game. It's a 3-4-point game, and he waited until 5 minutes to go to bring them back in when both of them only had 4 fouls, and they didn't receive another foul the rest of the game. So they both finished with 4 fouls. What's interesting about that is if they were not going to commit a foul, I know it's hearsay, oh, who knows what would have happened in the extra 2 minutes, but you've made a comeback. You've cut a 12-point lead down to 3 and consistently around 4. You have to put them back in, and you have to force Miami to counter it either by sticking with their current lineup. I mean, this is a team that for the most part was only getting buckets from LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. Only. And when that happens, you have to be able to stem the tide there and either keep yourself in the lead or keep yourself within striking distance if you're the Pacers. And not only that, you have to be able to – your 8 guys should be able to beat the 2 guys. If 2 guys are scoring 39 of the last 41 points for a team, that team should be very easy to defend. They did a terrible job in terms of their perimeter defense, allowing the Heat to get to the basket. Now, listen, you have LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. They're going to get to the basket. They're going to impose. But they didn't – for the first 3 games, specifically in games 2 and 3 and the first half of game 4, they had forced them to be outside shooters. They packed the lane and forced them to be outside shooters. And they lost their way in the third quarter, and it really – it killed them. And I think Vogel kind of did a really bad job not putting West and Hibbert back in a little bit sooner, because you could see them getting a little, not stagnant offensively, but a little bit of a, they started to rush things a little bit. Barbosa started taking some iffy shots. Paul George, I thought, took a terrible shot in transition. He pulled up for a 15-footer and clanked it off the front rim. So it was an interesting game, and I thought the Pacers played well enough to win. But listen, when you're going up against 2 of the top 5 players in the game, you know, they're going to give you some super hemming efforts every now and then, and that's exactly what they did. So the Heat force a game 5, tied it 2. We were going 5 anyway, but it would have been a much different game going back to South Beach with the Pacers up 3-1. And it'll be interesting to see how the Pacers respond, where they pretty much, knowing that they let a game slip away, that would have really put them in the driver's seat. So they go on. You have Oklahoma City, who tonight is looking to finish off the Lakers after a gut-wrenching loss in Game 4. If you're the Lakers, you're up 13 with 7 minutes to go. And not only do you allow Oklahoma City to come back, but you allow them to hit a 3. And Meta World Peace has got to do a better job of not slothing off Kevin Durant there. He has to get up in his face, and if they run a – he said he was worried about a pick and roll. If they're going to run a pick and roll, then you have to do it. But you have to force Durant to either put it on the – you have to let him make him either force it and take a tough contested shot or go to the basket. You can't allow him to just walk into a 3. And he drilled it, and Oklahoma City's now up 3-1. So we're out of time right now. I'd like to thank Christian Arnold for calling in. Check him out, IslandersHockeyBlog.com, and also read his stuff about the Islanders on TheFourthPeriod.com. And we'll be back next week. Like I said, we'll talk some Stanley Cup Finals. Both series will be complete, and we'll get everything going from there. NBA playoffs will continue, and a little baseball too. So everybody take care, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you again next week.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.